echte ervaring.
You are listening to That Digital Show, a business podcast presented by Google Cloud to help organizations innovate and grow value in a digital world. Episode 22, Agile Economics to Empower Cloud Strategies. In this episode, we'll discuss strategies to produce value for customers by leveraging agile economics to support the speed, scale, and stability of their business in the cloud. Hello, everyone. I'm Chris Hood, a digital strategist at Google Cloud. Thank you for listening. I appreciate every single one of you who are tuning in to this show each week. And I'm confident there are probably a dozen or more other people out there in your network that would find this podcast helpful. So please take a moment, connect with us online, subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. We're on all of them. And share a link to the show with someone in your network who wants to better understand how to grow business for their company. And at the end of the show, we have a great opportunity for all of you to learn more about today's topic in the form of a one sheet and a webcast where we're all going to get together and talk about this in much more detail. But today we have a packed house, so let's get right into it. Joining me is Alex Eldemer, Howard Rubin, and James Tsai. So how about we go around the room, introduce yourselves, and share a little bit about your background. Alex?
Chris, I run the team in Cloud Value Advisors at Google Cloud that handles the largest technology customers, as well as managing the CFO, tech economics, digital natives, and cloud benchmarking practices.
James?
I'm James Tsai. I lead Cloud Value Advisory for financial services in North America. Background in retail banking. Spent a majority of my career at the intersection of enterprise technology and financial services.
Howard.
Yeah, hi. I have a person of sort of maybe multiple identities. I'm a professor emeritus of computer science from Hunter College in New York and City University, which is one side of my life, and academic side. Practitioner side of me is I've been studying technology economics. I'm affiliated with a number of firms that have been honored to work with Google Cloud and helping to develop some of their models for technology economics.
Awesome, everyone. Thank you for sharing. I want to start with this. Let's say that I'm a chief digital officer or a VP of product, and I need to develop a cloud strategy for the next 5 years. I'm also asked to develop a budget for this strategy. Alex, where do I start? What do I need to think about?
So I think all three of us are going to answer different parts of this question throughout the podcast. I'll attack the first part, which is what problem are you really trying to solve? Fundamentally, so many companies, especially traditional enterprises, think of IT as a spend, as a cost, not as an investment. So the first thing is a mindset shift to actually start thinking about your IT as expenditure, as an investment. And that sets it all off. You're buying enabling technologies that actually set the business in motion. And if you treat your IT from that perspective where you expect a return, you're going to set up a better business plan and future projection.
The budgeting process really has to do with understanding what your objectives are. The financial engineering of the business, what kind of margins you're after, what you kind of grow, and what's the input you need of technology to get those outcomes. But there's another piece that the cloud brings to this. It's the economic agility. It's not like building a brick and mortar thing and suddenly you're trapped. Because one of the things that happened, unfortunately, in the past year with companies and pandemic is revenue collapses and they have all these fixed costs. The cloud environment supplies the underpinnings of agile economics that you sort of, I hate to use pay as you go, and that's a financial model of what you do. But you can scale your technology consumption to business volumes and revenue, which is different than the old models where you had to invest in things in long term and guarantee volumes and things like that. You know, this is sort of a complicated answer in some ways because you're saying, well, how do you budget for this stuff? Well, you budget based on the expected outcomes. You budget based on your financial model of how you're going to make money or for a not-for-profit serve your constituency. You budget to get the needed level of elasticity. As you invest in the future, you invest, but when you invest and that becomes operational, it trickles down to running the business and keeping your lights on.
So you have that mindset shift. And I often hear organizations talk about, I have this expense, I have this technology, whether it's legacy, whether it's outdated. And maybe you were touching on this. They look at it as, this is an asset that I have to bring in to support the business, as opposed to saying, I've got a product that I'm building for my consumers and the technology is enabling that product. This really is two different types of conversations, right?
It entirely is. A lot of the work up until now has been, oh, I'm spending all this money. Eventually, I hope to see some returns downstream, but I don't know how. What we're doing with cloud is we're essentially saying, here's the technology, here's the factory that you need to build your digital experiences. What components and what machinery, aka capabilities, cloud services, do I need to support the creation of my digital product? And if we actually look at what you need and how much you need in these different categories, that allows you to treat the investment in cloud as a business investment decision around capabilities for your digital business, as opposed to I've got to buy a bunch of racks and servers and networking equipment, et cetera, and hope that eventually I'm going to get some sort of return as it cascades and gets used by all these different users in my enterprise. Very different approach.
So what are the main components for building this type of strategy?
There are really three major components of how companies are thinking about this value creation system they're using to support their digital businesses. First is the technology stack. What are the platforms? What's the infrastructure? What's the data stack that I need to support my digital business? The second piece is, how do I onboard all my unique data? These are almost like the parts. The first part's the factory. The second part of the parts, how do I bring my data and connect it to this technology? And the third piece is, how do I get my people and operations using this data and using this technology to build customer and employee experiences that generate value, generate revenue? That's the system that people are building today using cloud that was impossible with the legacy approaches of a highly fractured supply chain around IT.
Okay, so just to reiterate, you had technology, data, and people. And those three components come together to help us build great new experiences for our consumers. But James, have we actually seen an increase in spending across those three components?
One of the things that we're seeing over and over again is that a lot of firms are leveraging exactly what Alex was just talking about, right? The speed and scale and unit economics of cloud to change how they're investing in technology, right? They're looking at how can they spend far more on growing the firm and far less on running the firm, right? And so taking that new money, or I should say maybe it was the old money, repurposed now for growing and invested in those cutting edge technologies, those customer and consumer experiences, and growing the top line, right? But also taking on operational costs, reducing risk, and improving responsiveness to the market. And all of those things have a direct impact on the P&L and also the overall performance metrics of a given firm.
So when I think of scale, I think of two quick references. One is for Black Friday in retail. Now we see growth during those seasonal periods. And for retail in 2020, we had 14 billion in online sales. And across the Black Friday weekend, 186.4 million shoppers. But here's the kicker. During that time, 100 million of those consumers were actually shopping online. Here's another reference. CBS, they hosted the Super Bowl this year, and they had an all-time record of simultaneous streaming, and that was around 5.7 million viewers per minute. Now, again, if you think about that, they had to scale in that moment. So, Alex, how should a company look at the cost of their need to scale, maybe seasonally or dynamically, during events like the Super Bowl or Black Friday?
So, Chris, I think this question hits the two sides of the economics of cloud really well. The first piece is, one of the most important drivers of economics of cloud is you don't pay for infrastructure you don't need when you're not using it. You only pay for the infrastructure you need. The second piece of it is, and we're seeing this to become much more of an issue, is that customers sometimes think their cloud spend is going to be static even though their businesses are dynamic. So just like you get the savings because you're not spending on infrastructure, you also have to budget and plan for capacity and expenditures that come when you have these peaks. So unlike the previous world where it's all about optimizing fixed spend and hoping that the business consumed enough to get you a return, now it's about dynamically budgeting and planning for spend that ramps with your revenue.
Another one of our customers is Kao. That's K-A-O. They are a cosmetics company. They were founded in 1887. their headquarters in Japan, and they have a U.S. headquarters in Cincinnati. Now, what's interesting about Cal is they needed to develop ways that they can improve their ability to generate sales and get information out to all of the various retail stores and vendors and sales reps that they have across the globe. And they wanted to build technology in the cloud to help them do that. They were able to get their development time from 40 weeks down to 4 weeks. So, James, we talked a lot during this episode about speed to market. How do you demonstrate this with an investment?
Yeah, it's a really good question. You would think that it would be difficult, actually, to define that in terms of speed to market and how cloud can help you. But actually, it's relatively straightforward. One of the key things that we use in terms of measuring speed to market as it relates to cloud is in something called DevOps, which is all about software delivery. And if you think about it, software delivery is essentially delivering capabilities to the business, right? And so the better you perform in software development, the better you perform in delivering those capabilities. And specifically, Google Cloud has a leading research and assessment capabilities for DevOps in the form of something called DORA, or DevOps Research and Assessment. And what that research and assessment allows us to do is to help companies benchmark themselves along really four key dimensions, right? Lead time in terms of changes and how long it takes to get code committed to production. There's deploy frequency in terms of how often are you deploying code to production. And then time to restore. So that's more on the recovery or the stability side of things. And so it's looking at how long does it take to restore a service if you have an incident or a defect. So that's an interesting way to look at, you know, how well are you able to respond to challenges? The same thing with change fail percentage. What percentage, or a way to measure what percentage of changes to production or releases to users result in degraded service and therefore require some sort of remediation? And so across those four different metrics, you can get a good sense for not only the throughput, but also the stability of your software development efforts and your performance therein. And therefore, we use that and the benchmarks that we have in depth to be able to measure where our customers are. We have benchmarks of where top cloud customers are and to what good looks like. And we can help customers to understand the gap, not only in their performance in terms of the metrics, but where they are from a best practices standpoint in terms of the practices that drive the outcomes you're looking for.
One of the scenarios that comes up a lot when I speak with customers is around trying to understand how other companies within their industry are accomplishing the things that they want to do. And so what I usually do is I share a story about a customer who's been successful understanding technology and digital products outside of their industry. And I'll get a natural response. Well, they're not in our industry and we're not that type of customer. And so what I say in response, yes, but you're missing the point here. There are lessons you can learn in terms of how to apply the same digital strategies across into your own industry. And I think we see some of that with digital natives who have a foundation for developing technologies and integrating their products and financial strategies around that technology. But how do we take some of that same lessons learned and apply it to traditional companies or legacy companies who are still trying to figure out how to go through this process?
There's two areas of data sources that we have. One is what we work with Howard on, all the information he's collecting from large, essentially the global 2000, about how they're investing and spending and getting returns on their tech spend. And then the other laboratory are the cloud natives, where they're building purely digital businesses and we see the economics of their behaviors. And we're trying to bring what we're learning around the cloud natives and the actual behaviors that Howard is and the patterns he's seeing together to help legacy customers, to help traditional enterprises take advantage of all the benefits that cloud brings. One of the things we're seeing in the cloud native world is that they essentially set up their services, what they need for their digital businesses, and they grow. And they initially focus on growing revenue. They've got to get the business running. But as they are growing their business and they get to a certain scale where they know it's going to be successful, they have a language, and there's a term for it called bending the cost curve. So they are looking at growing their revenues at a straight or even increasing rate while flattening or even bending down their revenues. And the only way they can do that is the visibility that comes from cloud services, their ability to track and measure them, and then optimize how they consume those inputs to generate outputs, financial outputs in their digital business. And we want to bring that same capability, that same visibility to traditional companies.
This is sort of from the outside in. You figure out what your business needs to look like in its next evolution or what your business needs to look like when you grow up. You have to figure out when that business grows up, what do you want out of technology? Like Alex gave an example of increasing revenue. So you want to use technology to grow revenue. You want to be, when you get mature, you may want to use technology to protect revenue. You're going to get cost reduction and cost avoidance, and you have to manage risk. So you can look at engineering what your budget should be, and you can have a fintech, and early on it's not scaled, but the technology expense relative to revenue might be very high, and as this thing starts to grow, you start to rescale it.
One of the things that I picked up on was this concept around agile finances. I think that hits the mark more than anything if I was to summarize in one quick phrase. This concept that I don't have to leverage on a fixed asset with a long-term financial impact to the organization. The cloud allows me to be much more nimble in terms of how I can facilitate my finances across the technology to be able to enable some of these product features and some of these other things that you've talked about, like what are my consumers actually asking for? And instead of investing in a technology, I can actually modify it to meet those demands, to adapt to the market trends, to adapt to disruptions that are happening within the marketplace almost in real time.
You know, companies are talking about in their annual reports, we're going to cloud, we have agile processes, we're going to cloud, we're becoming agile. They don't marry the two things together. They need agile economics. The agile economics allows them to engineer their hedge against business volatility changes. And I think that's the missing ingredient in most companies. They're not designing their economics of the companies to be agile.
We've got agile product development. We've got agile DevOps. We've got agile processes. The last domain of lack of agility is finance. And we need to bring those dynamic processes to finance. And given that IT is one of the largest buckets of investment across all firms, it's a great place to put in place the linkage between agile finance and agile business.
Alex, is there a mix between human and technology capital that organizations should be aware of?
Without a doubt, they're mutually interdependent. A lot of companies think it's one or the other, and a lot of time they think it's the technology. You definitely need low unit cost, scalable technology, but it's absolutely worthless if it's not matched with data and not matched with the people and processes that can make use of it. Just acquiring the technology won't get you there. You need to enable your people to use cloud technology and put in place cloud processes. Time and time again, every major company I talk to says their biggest bottleneck is not budget, it's not technology, it's not even tech debt. It's the people and processes to make use of the technology in an agile, productive, stable way.
Another customer story for you, Champ. They are an air cargo company. They generate roughly 300 million data exchanges and 20 million shipments annually. Now, what was interesting about Champ was that they mostly focused on cargo air delivery. But last year with the pandemic, they saw an opportunity where they had an increase in shipments being demanded from them. And the commercial airline industry had no travel, but those planes were still operational. They had the data between shipping times and shipping weights and capabilities, but they were able to merge that data together and generate opportunities to ship a bunch of cargo across the world, leveraging commercial airlines. We can all recognize that every business in the world was disrupted in some way last year. And I will go out on a limb and say that every company out there in the world will eventually be disrupted again at some point in time. And we often talk about how the cloud can bring this additional layer of security, but the cloud can also be a way to keep your company adaptable and hopefully at times avoid disruption. Now, to me, it boils down to, do you want to stay in business or not? So, Alex, how do we demonstrate stability within our value proposition?
I think it's even a little bit different. And there's no question that so many companies are aware that if they don't digitize faster, they are going to be in deep trouble. And as we keep on coming back to it, it's about technology, data, people, and processes. And in order to make the most of the opportunities you're facing in the marketplace, data, your data is unique and a differentiator and allows you to act in ways that no competitor can. So getting your data usable faster, combining it with other data, and then tying it to applications is how you avoid massive disruption happening to you and fundamentally how you create business stability. Then there's another piece of stability, which is technological stability, and that simply comes from the scale and the operational experiences and the service orientation that a large cloud provider like Google has that no individual company can map. So I think it comes to both sides of it. One is business stability that comes from making the most of your assets in the fastest way possible to create the most value, and then two, taking advantage of partners that can make you most as stable as possible. One quick story. I was working with a major global financial institution last year, and they said that they totally understood that data was a key differentiator, and they were collecting up data that no other company had, and they needed to get it into their applications for their customers and their employees. They said that working with Google Cloud, they could onboard and use data sources in days. Before Google Cloud, it would take them 3 to 4 months per data source. That's the type of difference that you get from cloud. And you can see how that type of acceleration allows you to seize market opportunities and free up people to do higher value work simply by moving to the most modern way to do business, which is right now on the cloud.
I'm starting to see a simple formula from our discussion today. Earlier, we highlighted that companies need to invest in technology, data, and people. We've also discussed a few times now the ability for businesses to get to market faster, scale their business, and keep their business stable. So could we simplify all of this by saying an investment in technology, data, and people returns value through speed, scale, and stability?
Without a doubt. And the key element that I'd like to add to that is at low unit marginal cost, and if done right, outsized economic returns.
This is a set of considerations, but those considerations are all housed in the framework of the distinct outcomes you're trying to get with business operational efficiency, getting close to your customer, and being a product leader, getting stuff back out to the market, because you don't want what you've done the past year to choke your ability to evolve into the future. You want to harness the future and turn it into an asset, and that's what cloud and the technologies we're talking about really enables you to do.
James, you work with one of our groups at Google Cloud called the Cloud Value Advisors, and you do just this. You advise our customers on how they can unlock new opportunities and achieve business value leveraging the cloud. So could you walk through some of the activities that you're working on and how you're helping our customers in this process?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that we're doing is in our work with Howard, developing all of these different pieces of IP and helping customers to understand how they can right size their IT investments based on their organizational strategies. We have taken those insights and taken the data and brought those to our customers in engagements. And we work with our customers and engage with them to bring those perspectives, bring those insights to their executive teams to help them understand both on the business side of things as well as on the technology side of things, where the value is in cloud and how those two things, both the business side and the technology side, come together in this new cloud paradigm. We look at it from leveraging that cloud value framework of looking at cost optimization through infrastructure, data and analytics, and culture, and the ability to actually absorb that change. All those things are important. And then how do all those things come together to drive those outcomes that you're looking for? And sometimes that's at the firm-wide level. Sometimes that's within specific areas of the firm. But those are the types of questions we seek to answer and help our customers to understand and navigate as they look at where should I be investing in cloud and what should I be doing and how should I be doing it.
We have this concept of a value zone. Can you summarize value zone in two sentences?
Without a doubt, the value zone is a quick diagnostic for an individual company to understand their technology strategies in place versus the technology strategies they should have to maximize the returns on their investments in technology.
James, what type of data is required to conduct a value zone assessment?
You know, you actually don't need a ton of data. You need to understand revenue, IT spend, operating income, and the number of employees. And from there, we can derive the two major indexes of the value zone analysis, which is the value index and the cost index. And on the value side, what we look at is revenue per employee against IT spend as a percent of revenue. And this tells us how much leverage you can get from IT spend. And when compared to peers, what you look for is those that have higher revenue per employee, but lower IT spend as a percent of revenue. They typically are showing a more leveraged use of technology to drive revenue and growth. On the cost side, we look at income per employee and IT spend as a percentage of operating income. The idea here is that we're looking at IT spend as it relates to driving, you know, how it's related to costs and margins. And so you want to maximize the income per employee, but again, minimize the spend to drive that income. Really, you don't need a ton of data. We use that to synthesize additional data points, and we compare it against arguably one of the world's most comprehensive databases for these types of metrics.
Awesome. Let's look at our question of the day. Okay, here's our question of the day. Hi, Chris. I work at a national bank, and one of our largest challenges with moving to the cloud is our regulatory compliance and governance requirements. How should we build a value perspective around digital progression and risk mitigation? Let's go around and briefly touch on this from each of your perspectives. James?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I think there's two facets of this. There's getting to the cloud and operating in the cloud, and both require careful considerations around regulatory and compliance. I think in the move to the cloud, you want to work very closely with your regulators and help them understand what this move entails and what the risks are that you see and how you plan to operate and how you plan to remain compliant. It also requires a level of engagement with the regulators from your cloud provider as well. And one of the things that Google likes to do is work with our financial institutions and our customers on working with their regulators directly and go hand in hand and help them understand that. What does it mean to run in the cloud as a bank, and what are the implications then? The other piece of it in terms of operating in the cloud is around training and enablement and making sure that all of your processes and all the regulatory frameworks and everything that you do as part of managing all of those functions is also then taken into consideration, because the cloud does have some nuances and ways in which you operate that you need to be aware of. And so when you think about it from a value perspective, we've talked a lot about scale and speed and agility and all of those things. It does enable you to move faster. But in moving faster, you need to then make sure that you do have those things built into your regulatory and compliance frameworks in order to ensure that when you do move faster, that it's not like the Facebook of old of move fast and break things, but move fast and stay compliant.
Howard?
Well, let me take a little different perspective on it because of the regulatory aspects of it. So think of the cloud in general as an industrial strength container, and that industrial strength container is built to specifications around cybersecurity and threat avoidance, probably to the highest standard, perhaps even a higher standard than most companies can afford internally in terms of dealing with things like, you know, the spyware, denial of service, and things like that. You don't hear about this day by day in terms of a cloud provider, especially Google, being victims and being amenable to attack. So there's the regulatory aspect and there's a cybersecurity aspect of it. And in the cybersecurity aspect, that's one of the things that a cloud provider like Google can shine at in terms of giving you an environment that's up to the highest standard of being able to have threat avoidance, threat mitigation, and people are just focused on that to levels that are typically not possible in organizations of very smaller scale.
Alex?
Well, I think this is a great question for this particular podcast because it actually calls attention to the economics of cloud. As James pointed out, there's a lot of work that needs to happen to be compliant, And we as a cloud provider are doing this with all of our customers. Therefore, we have established practices, tools, and technologies to help accelerate the process and accelerate the approvals. We do it many times. Each company does it once. And as Howard has said, there's also economies of scale to security. We are fighting it for all of our customers and able to invest at scale to fight against and protect our customers from a regulatory compliance and security perspective in a way that no individual firm can, and with economics that are superior to what any firm could generate. So security is just another perfect example of how the consolidation and scale that cloud brings to businesses leads to superior economics.
Thank you, everyone, for your incredible perspectives and information that you shared on our topic today. As we discussed throughout today's episode, if you would like to learn more about Google Cloud's Value Zone, you can find a link to a one-pager on our website at thatdigitalshow.com. You can navigate to episode 22, scroll down, and you'll find a link in the resource section and on the right side of the page. In addition, the four of us, myself and Alex, James and Howard, will be connecting once again to have a walkthrough and demo of the Value Zone on the C2C community. Head over to c2cglobal.com, look for the event, achieve future-proofed value from your cloud strategy, and you can join us to watch the full webcast, ask questions, or just join in the discussion about the Value Zone or anything else we covered in today's episode. And thanks to all of you for listening. If you have questions, comments, or ideas for the show, connect with us throughout social media and join us next week as we explore another business transformation topic on That Digital Show. Thanks for listening.